Welcome to the first episode of the European Super Motorsport Podcast. We've collaborated with Motorsport, Autosport, The Race, Team Quadrant, and Veloce. Wait, guys? Guys? Where is everyone? Hey gang, you didn't think we'd leave you that quickly, would you? Welcome to episode 298 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighbourhood host, Dre Harrison, still deeply recovering from the outro of episode 297. I've had counselling, we should be okay, and good to know that little Buckley will save us all one day.
It has many powers, I'm not so sure if saving the masses is one of them.
For more on that, see Ryan King's Twitter page. In the meantime, with me as always is Ryan Eric King. Have you forgiven me for last week, Ron?
No, I have not. I have not. And I'm wearing powder blue today in tribute of the Club of the People. And you're my favorite airline, Etihad Airways.
Oh, a word. Club of the People. Man City.
That's right.
Sure. Well, King, you're not the only one dabbling in traitorous heathenry. We are both Manchester United fans. We know how this works. It's even worse you wearing a light blue shirt for that very reason. We're going down together on this one, King.
No. If Ed could leave, I could leave too.
Last one on, turn off the microphone. Speaking of which, oh, all of a sudden, random Juventus fan Cam Buckley is with us. Hello, sir.
I would like to issue a disclaimer that I have no allegiance to any football club. I am that guy out in space seeing Earth get blown up by something. Because, man, being in the middle of a call in our Discord and that news coming through was...
Oh my god.
It's kind of surreal.
Yeah, we thought just we like, were on the verge of something cataclysmic happening that was going to forever alter the landscape of association football throughout the world. It didn't even last 48 hours. We didn't even didn't get to the podcast long. Recording before this whole project fell to shit.
We didn't... Sony intended to shut down the PS3 and PlayStation Vita stores. And they backtracked slower on this than the ESL did.
Yeah, we've literally had guest appearances on this podcast last longer than that Super League lasted.
Mine certainly did.
What's good, RJ? What's good?
Happy to be here as always. Big day recording. Big day. Everything happens right there or thereabouts on April 20th.
Yeah, we are still recovering from the wake of the European Super League news. As Cam alluded to and as King alluded to, we were all on Discord as this news dropped, and we basically spent the next 3 hours mindlessly speculating about what could or what couldn't happen. It was one of the most bizarre Discord calls I have ever been in, and King's way smarter than I am, and even he was stumped. So it kind of says it all about just how wacky that was. Long story short, all you big football clubs should be ashamed of yourselves, you greedy bastards. And that's
you
barely
know what?
The tip of the
iceberg. Fuck you on Champions your League.
And don't get me wrong, you know how bad it is when you make UEFA look like the good guys here? Like,
yeah. You know how bad it is when like progressives are on the same side as Boris Johnson about something?
The one thing that was able to unite football Twitter, which is the most toxic, heathen, big Jurassic Park 2 mound of bullshit that could possibly unite football Twitter, was the European Super League, or should I say, being against the European Super League. Like, it was like
the
Bloods
and
the Crips.
Emergency actions from the UK government.
This got lifelong fans, like, threatening to quit on their teams.
Pattern Shaq was about to get beat the hell up outside of Stamford Bridge.
Tony George is sitting. Tony George is sitting in his house. Like, even reaction to my split wasn't that bad.
Right. But, like, as King pointed out, Pattern Shaq outside Stamford Bridge, surrounded by a mob, and there was only one police officer separating him from potential stampede. I think is the best way I could describe it as. crazy stuff. It's been a mad 72 hours on Twitter. This was basically football's version of Game of Thrones Red Wedding.
I'm just glad we can go back to normalcy. We can go back to a paint company and their dog mascot dunking on the club they sponsor. We can go back to the good old days.
Bring back the Dulux dog. Bring back the Dulux dog. You know how mad it is when Jose Mourinho getting sacked from a football club didn't even get mentioned on Monday Night Football? He was sacked like 6 hours before the broadcast. Not a word. None. Nada.
He's truly the special one.
The first European Super League manager to get sacked. What a marquee moment there.
Whoa. The only European Super League manager to get sacked.
And Manchester United chairman Ed Woodward announced he's stepping down from United, and I almost started ripping my jeans off and doing the helicopter dance right there and then.
Right, I think we should get this show back on track. We are not a football podcast.
Thank you for tuning into our football podcast.
This was the
football
like
101 coming soon, probably.
Is it
maybe
just what the world needed? Another football podcast. As if there isn't any of them out there, as it is.
Dre, don't worry. Housekeeping,
I'll get to that in just a second, but yeah, we had to get that one in there because it was such a massive one for sport. Don't worry. I hope you enjoyed this one-off episode of Keeping It 101.
I need to get the obligatory sponsor plug in there. For only £1 a month, you could get excellent local reporting from The Athletic.
Okay. Damn.
All right, T-Funk Football on YouTube. I see what you did there.
Joe Devine has entered the chat.
I see what you did there, King. Very good, very good. Now, in the first part of this doubleheader of recordings we're going to do, in this one, episode 298, we're going to be talking about Formula One's, and I'm going to butcher pronunciation here, the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix. It's an Imola.
That's not the full name of the race this year. It's the Emilia-Romagna.
King, if we finish it, we finish the title, we're not going to have time left in the show. And that's the time left on the show.
Yep. Thanks for watching, everybody. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Basically, you can find us one more time.
It's the San Marino Grand Prix. Change my mind.
Spicy San Marino.
Okay. It's the Grand Prix that happened to take place at Imola. We'll go with that. And it was a surprisingly good Imola Grand Prix, of all things. Because, you know, we're generally pretty down in Imola here on this podcast.
House
it's a fun track.
Keeping.
Yeah, but we'll get into that after the housekeeping, as King reminds me for the second time. But you can find us we're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. If you're on YouTube, by the way, hi. Subscribe, hit the bell, like the video, all that good stuff. You can know when new content drops. Our Twitter handles are also on the screen if you're watching us on YouTube. If not, they're at Harrison101HD, at CBuckley917, at RJ O'Connell, and at Ryan Eric King. Our podcast is at Motorsport_101. You can find us on Instagram as well at Motorsport101Pod. And if you really, really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of the audio versions of our show. You can upgrade to the $10 version to enter the supporters club of our Discord, where you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded and get early access to all of the video versions of the show as well. Whew. All of that and more on our website, Motorsport101.com. So after this, we'll get into the Emilia-Romagna, made in Italy, is totally not in San Marino, Grand Prix.
Brought to you by Pamonti Calcio.
Brought to you when Konami buys the rights to the European Super League.
Don't you dare.
Okay, that's my last football reference for the show, I promise. Okay, let's get into what was a pretty darn good Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix. And we already thought this could be very interesting when the grid came through. Hamilton starting on pole from Perez and Verstappen. We had a bit of excitement with Lando Norris. Very nearly qualifying on the second row, but then track limits. Remember them from last time? They came back with a vengeance.
Track limits here at the Motorsport 101 podcast.
Yes, yes. And sadly, track limits took away a lap that would have put Lando third on the grid, splitting the Red Bulls. But sadly, I think we're further back as a result of that one. And Valtteri down in eighth. We all thought it was going to be spicy. And then when we were watching MotoGP, which was going on about an hour beforehand on our Discord server, we get the word from Chris Medland, rain, heavy rain. It buckets it down at Imola, 50 minutes before race start. So it went from a minor chance of rain to a we're starting on intermediates and in some cases the extreme wet. We had a changeable conditions race and it was a wet first half of the Grand Prix. And starting in the rain, Verstappen gets a great launch from third. And by the time we get to turn one, he, shall we say, muscles Hamilton out of the way at turn one.
Gave Lewis a little taste of his own medicine.
Just a squeeze.
Yes. Let's just say Lewis has done that a lot over the years. It was actually kind of refreshing seeing that happen to him for once, if I'm not going to lie to you. Verstappen pretty much controlled the race from there on out. There was a couple of minor flashpoints in there. The first big transition stop from dries to slicks was probably the biggest one of those. Hamilton taking time out of Verstappen. Verstappen comes in. It gives Merckx a shot at the overcut. Then Merckx botched the pit stop. It was a minor botch. It was a 4-second stop. And it was enough to get Verstappen back out at front. And it looked like Verstappen was going to win this relatively comfortably until red flag. And before that, well, okay, it's a kind of a crazy two-lap sequence. Hamilton trying to get past lap traffic.
I think it becomes really important. Trying to get past George Russell.
Trying to get past George Russell in traffic. And remember this, it becomes important later. Hamilton spins out at Tosa, taps the wall, has to reverse the car back out onto the track. Luckily, it was safe for him to rejoin when he did. Otherwise, he might have seen the old reversing on the track penalty come into play. But yeah, he damaged his front wing, had to go into the pits for a stop and to change his wing. Everyone was sitting there going, oh my God, Hamilton is fuming. One lap later, George Russell is trying to overtake Valtteri Bottas on the run down to turn one. Bottas takes the defensive line on the left-hand side. He suddenly jerks over to the right at the last minute. Russell overcorrects himself, puts a wheel or a slick tire on the wet part of the outside of the track, loses control, and spins into the side of Bottas's car. They're both out. Bottas's car is completely obliterated. Russell is wrecked. Russell is storming mad out of the car. Calls Bottas
two cars
prick.
Completely written off.
Yeah, a complete write-off. Damage to the wall. They had to red flag it to check the wall was okay. Thankfully, both drivers all right. Because it was a big one. A lot of wreckage and brake boards everywhere. It was, two very angry drivers in the middle point of the Grand Prix. My favorite was Bottas giving Russell the middle finger as he drove past the seat.
Well, he was just telling him he was number one.
Indeed.
It was a simultaneous thing because as Bottas was giving him the finger, Russell reaches down to just bonk him on the top of the helmet.
Bonk.
Yeah.
This was a fight for eighth place on the road. So yes, George Russell had a pretty darn good chance of points at Imola for the second year in a row. And nothing to show for it. There was a red flag.
A whole bunch.
Yep. So there was about a 30-minute red flag when if Mitchell the wall was okay. We restarted. Hamilton was down in ninth. He ended up systemically picking his way through the field, eventually getting past Lando Norris to finish second. But Verstappen, by this point, was 20 seconds down the road. Verstappen winning The Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix, his first win of the year, the 11th of his career, Hamilton second, and Lando Norris on the podium in third, meaning we had the first all-British podium in just about two Brits on the podium for the first time in 9 years. I almost called Max Verstappen British, which...
Given the feelings of some of the Sky Sports team towards Max Verstappen, you might be easily confused for thinking so.
Yeah, they're already describing Verstappen as, quote, one of the best of all time on Twitter going into this weekend, and I'm just sitting here going...
He's got some time before we can say anything like that.
They were using leftover Vettel clips from 2018. I understand, you got to recycle old content every once in a while. Let's get into the race itself. Pardon me. And we got to talk Hamilton Verstappen. And this was basically round two of... They picked right up where Bahrain left off. And not that we knew it at the time, but it could have easily been assumed to think it was settled at turn one.
Yeah, I mean, this... I think we were expecting something a little bit different out of qualifying, where Red Bull seemed to have the one-lap pace, but both Perez, who was were surprisingly put at P2 on the grid, and Verstappen both made mistakes on their flying laps. Hamilton made a clean lap, and sometimes that's enough. Put it on pole, and it didn't matter, because Max Verstappen got the start of the gods, got up his inside at turn one, and as we mentioned, just elbowed Hamilton off the track.
Yeah, that was nothing Hamilton could do in response to that one. He was just muscled off the road. And like I said on the show before, Hamilton's had a knack of doing this to other people over the years. So it was actually kind of a...
Call up Nico Rosberg. Ask him about it.
I may or may not have grinned when I saw that happen, thinking, how about that one, Hamilton? See how you like it for once.
Race how you'd like to be raced, and I mean, this was an emphatic return fire after Red Bull really let one get away in Bahrain. This was them taking one back on Mercedes, and it's very telling with these two drivers. We're seeing them both have to push so hard that they're making mistakes. They're having to take risks. They're having to put their cars in positions where they normally wouldn't, because there's one point between them and the championship right now. This championship could reasonably be decided by fastest lap points right now. And it's being decided by the fact that Hamilton got fastest lap right at the end of the race.
Mm-hmm. And it's good that we're back to this point, because we haven't seen a championship fight this close since the peak of Vettel's time at Ferrari. And we talked about this a bit on the show. It's going to trickle down to where the teams are going to have to start developing their cars longer over the course of the year than they would have liked to, because if you didn't know, there's a wholesale regulation change coming just around the corner next season.
Yep. Right now we're watching a repeat of... If these cars stay as close as they are, we're watching a repeat of McLaren and Ferrari in 2008. You don't leave a Formula One title on the table if it's in front of you. Ask BMW Sauber about that. And if these two teams have to keep throwing parts at their car, having to throw time at their car, Woking, Maranello, they're looking real good right now. Ferrari, who have already said that... they've already been devoting all their resources to 2022 since January. And McLaren, who are certainly on the ascendancy.
It's actually kind of funny as well, because even to follow on from the point about how close this is, there was both periods of this race where Red Bull looked like they could win it, and there was moments where Hamilton was coming back. We saw it in the changeable conditions, as it was getting drier and drier. Hamilton was suddenly taking a couple of seconds a lap out of Verstappen. And you're sitting there thinking,
it's funny you
mentioned
that.
This car was damaged.
Yeah, he lost the left-hand footplate on his front wing. And with these new simpler wings, any component is a major component on these front wings. You lose anything, it's going to matter. It's kind of funny. Hamilton had worn his intermediates down like what happened in Turkey last year. So the center of the tire was slick. And in the drying conditions that actually gave him some extra contact patch to play with.
Push harder, burn that intermediate.
Pirelli, I don't know whether to ask to never change or please change. But it's... this is a legitimate fight. Mercedes and Red Bull now are... they're throwing everything at each other. And... just look at the way the race played out. Max has to muscle Lewis out at turn one to get ahead. He pulls a gap. Lewis gets that gap back. Mercedes is in a position to potentially get the overcut. They botch the pit stop under pressure. Max gets held up through traffic at the start of the next stint. Once he clears the traffic, that's when Hamilton made his mistake. He was trying to get through the traffic because he knows if Max clears off ahead of the lap cars, he's probably not going to be able to run that gap down. The pace is too close between them. Hamilton had to take a calculated risk to send it up the inside of George Russell, dipped a wheel out on the wet pavement, and the car snapped on him.
I don't know if it was just a wheel, though. I think he was like fully committed to that wet line. He was off the, he was completely off the drive line. And, you know, I give Lewis Hamilton a better chance than most drivers to make that move stick without sliding off. But unfortunately, it just didn't come off that time.
Well, and this is a track, and certainly in these conditions, a very small mistake could have massive consequences. There is no runoff at Imola. If you go off, you're either in the gravel or in a wall.
Right, proper racetrack, isn't it?
Oh, Lord.
Silence, boomer.
Yeah, that's why I know a lot of people love Imola, because it is an old-school track. It's not as forgiving as other Grand Prix circuits out there. I know that's why a lot of people love it, because it's not like all these modern tracks and their big old runoff periods where you can make a mistake and it doesn't hurt you, etc., etc. Well, this is one of those ones where the old school guys got what they wanted on this one, and I don't think Hamilton has made this many mistakes in a season. Like, last year, he was virtually flawless on track, apart from maybe the opening round.
Well,
last
year, I was looking at Hamilton. He was making mistakes not because he was under pressure, but because he was bored.
Yeah.
He was making just careless errors rather than, you know, trying to throw it up the inside of someone to try and salvage what he can in a fight for the win.
Yeah, it was mainly procedural stuff where it's like, well, you're not supposed to do a practice start here, or hey, you forgot to realize the pit lane's closed.
Whoops. Yeah, it was just,
And now he's made... we've seen Verstappen arguably cost himself a win in Bahrain. You know, took too many liberties, went off the track, had to give the place back. Now we've seen Hamilton cost himself a potential win, crashing the car trying to get through traffic.
Yeah.
And this is what we want to see. We want to see the drivers having to try, having to beat the shit out of each other to try and win these races.
And that's the most fascinating part of motorsport. It's the squishy bit behind the wheel. It's the fuming error that will come into play. And we've already seen that with both races so far this season. Hamilton, Mercedes, Red Bull, and Verstappen, teams-wise and driver-wise, we've basically had everything in the first two rounds already, and we've barely scratched the surface. Verstappen winning comfortably on this one in the end, not really being under too much pressure in the second half, as mentioned. And yeah, Hamilton coming through, again, vintage Hamilton comeback at the end. This was the sloppiest race Hamilton's had probably since maybe 2015 in Hungary. And despite all that, second place, fastest lap, keeps championship lead.
We should talk about why his mistake ended up getting wiped clean, at least from a time loss standpoint.
That's the big flashpoint of the race, isn't it? Valtteri Bottas versus George Russell. Who's at fault?
And yes, you heard us correctly. Valtteri Bottas in a Mercedes, George Russell in a Williams.
That's great for Williams that they're able to race a Mercedes on pace alone, on merit amidst changeable conditions. That's great for them. But for Valtteri Bottas in a contract year, already under scrutiny for being no more than a rear gunner, And now he's starting to lose even that ability to be an effective rear gunner. And now he gets taken out in a crash, trying to defend a low points position against a Williams.
Not good. We'll talk about the ramifications with Valtteri next segment, but I wanted to, we'll talk about the incident itself. And I mean, where are we pinning the? I mean, we love to pin blame on these things, and I know it's a bit cliche, but how do we feel about this one?
I'm leaning towards 60-40 Bottas, where it's like, it's definitely not 100% his fault, but like, it's a racing incident where Bottas put everyone in that position for that incident to happen.
Yeah, if you put someone in a position where on track where they have to cooperate and they don't, things get very messy very quickly, and that's kind of what we saw here.
Yeah, I was going to say, the way I looked at it, it was like a boxing judge's scorecard where it was like 116, 115, one guy. So you could say, you know what, there's an argument. If you had a couple of rounds going the other way, you can see how the other guy might have won. And this is how I looked at it. I had it the other way compared to King. I had it 60-40 Russell, only because Valtteri does jerk over a car length or so in the braking zone, or if not very near the braking zone.
Yeah, they weren't at the braking zone yet.
Yeah, you can tell they weren't at the braking zone because they took out literally all the brake marker board.
That's why we had the red flag. There was brake marker board as far as the eye could see.
You can't see, but there'd be an ultimate wreckage sign coming down if you were playing Forza Horizon 4 after all the brake boards were taken out.
And like, that's why I lean towards it being more Bottas' fault, because Russell had such a huge run. He was going to go get clear of Bottas without a problem until... Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I look at it different. The thing is, different angles of this crash give different blame, because if you look at it from the onboard of Kimi Raikkonen, who was following this, and must be a war photographer as far as watching crashes happen in front of him by this point.
Yeah.
It looks like it's 100% Bottas' fault. If you look at it from Russell's onboard, it looks like it's mainly Russell's fault. We didn't get a good head-on shot of it, but
yeah,
I'm somewhere in the middle where Bottas, I'd say, triggered what ended up happening.
Mm.
Russell made that crash happen because the edge of the track was still wet. Russell had DRS open. It was still drying out, but enough that they were on slicks. They were on, DRS was available. And Bottas moves over to the right. You do that naturally at that portion of the track to get a better run through the corner.
Yeah.
He jinks right a little bit. Russell overreacted. Not so much an overreaction in dry conditions, but in the wet conditions, puts a wheel on the wet stuff, goes onto the grass, comes back, and really T-bones Bottas.
But I think a part of the incident that people ignore is that first part, where Bottas moves over to the left side of the track. Track's still drying. He moves over to the wet side of the track. He could have maintained position if he just held his line and stayed on the right side.
Mm.
He went onto the wet part of the track to almost as if he was trying to break the draft. Not that it mattered, because the Williams is a goddamn missile in a straight line.
Yeah.
And, both drivers come out of this looking like, well, Valtteri, why the hell were you fighting a Mercedes? And Russell, you had points. Williams? He was fighting with his own Mercedes during the weekend. And why were you, George, why were you sending it like that when you were already in the points? You were going for more points, but It just feels like unnecessary position and unnecessary risk from both sides.
Do we think, and I know crash. It's like, and it's, and I know this is really, really easy to say in hindsight. You think maybe looking back on it, Russell maybe could have made it one more lap to try and make the move? Or was that his window such of opportunity to get past?
He had such a run on Bottas, I don't think anyone doesn't go for a move in that situation.
Yeah.
It wasn't a situation of if gap car. It looked like he could have made the move with relative ease.
Yeah. Like, the fact that he was easily able to pull alongside of Bottas before the braking zone just says how much speed he had.
And unfortunately, as a result, we got an awful accident. So I said race was red flagged. We almost had an instance of Fight Club as a result of that.
Baby Fight Club.
Skirmish Club, I guess you could say, in this occasion. Certainly skirmish. Russell wrote a lengthy apology from his PR company on Twitter.
Well, No, we got to backtrack.
Before that,
I think is the main takeaway from this incident, because George Russell was incensed, both on the radio and in interviews after the fact.
Yeah, he was livid. He was absolutely livid. You know, he mentioned, he took a pot shot similar to what we were doing on this show, saying, you know, Bottas should be challenging for wins and podiums. Ninth means nothing to him. Ninth means everything to us. Yep. And, you know, shouldn't be racing
more
than
that
way. You know,
Russell said that maybe Bottas made that move because of who I am and who he is in that car.
Yeah.
And that went down like a lead balloon with Mercedes. And Toto Wolff, who kind of employs George Russell at their driver academy, quote, "That's bullshit."
Yeah, literally.
I do love when Toto tells the truth. He's very fun to listen to.
He has no problem turning the dial up to about a 9 on the spice meter on that one. Yeah, he straight up called it bullshit. He was like, kids, settle down, basically, in post-race interviews, and basically said that, yeah, you know, it's the sort of move where you look like a hero if you put it off. You look like you're racing in the Clio Cup if you get it wrong, basically.
Well, I do think we need to acknowledge that Toto Wolff knows what kind of character he comes off as, and he's done this before. Where
he loves to play that
the
he knows
unacceptable.
The role he plays.
Like he knows what people expect out of him in terms of answers, and he knows how to distract, deflect, make people look at the side of situations that he wants them to see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he knows how to play that card. He's not stupid. Unlike one of his drivers, he's very good at handling the media and basically telling people what they want to hear. He was quite witty in trying to basically dissolve any political tension between his number two driver at Mercedes and the penciled in golden child at Williams that is probably set to inherit his seat potentially maybe next year. We'll have to wait and see. Russell's PR company wrote a statement about this on Twitter a couple of days ago, as we were recording this on April 21st. This was on the 19th, saying, quote, "Yesterday wasn't my proudest day. I knew it would be one of our best opportunities to score points this season, and when those points matter as much as they do to us right now, sometimes you take risks. It didn't pay off, and I have to take responsibility for that. Having had time to reflect on what happened afterwards, I know I should have handled the situation better. Emotions can run high in the heat of the moment, and yesterday mine got the better of me. I apologise to Valtteri, to my team, and anyone who felt let down by my actions."
Oh man, it sounds like he's resigning. It sounds like he's resigning as president of Real Madrid.
God, I wish. I wish. Quote, "That's not who I am. I expect more from myself." I'm just like, oh, this is so...
It's just seething PR.
Oh, yeah. "As I know, others expect more from me." I've learned some tough lessons this weekend and will come out of this a better driver and a better person for the experience. Now, it's full focus on Portugal. Well, but you've got the Bill Belichick line in there. We're on to the Algarve. and a chance to show what I'm really all about. Thanks for all the messages, both positive and negative. They all help me to grow. I'm sorry.
He didn't write a single word.
I know, right? I was like, I wouldn't mention this on the set list, but I had to read that out because it is just so PR manifested. I couldn't even keep a straight face while reading it. Like, it's so cheesy. It's like, thanks for all the haters too, because you make me better. It sounds like a YouTuber's apology. It really does.
He sounds like bowling legend Pete Weber.
Whatever it is, I am. Oh, damn.
I gotta say, though, this is not the most embarrassing PR statement that's been put out in sporting media this past week. Sup, Mark Davis?
Oh, not even close.
He barely cracks the top five.
One would say it doesn't crack the top 12.
No, like, yeah, to say the least. Following on from that incident, I put it in the set list notes, and again, I don't mind sharing this out there. I called it another Bottas referendum, because here we are again. Like, we've had conversations about the state of Valtteri in this team, and I openly admit, I'm one of Valtteri's bigger defenders. Unlike King, who gives him perfect scores in season reviews. But... but... point is that... this is my personal opinion, that we kind of know why Merckx signed him. Yeah, he wasn't going to rock the boat like Nico Rosberg was, and he probably wasn't on Rosberg's level as a driver. Not that we really thought that at the time. You know, hindsight is a wonderful thing. But this now matters so much more, given the state of play in the field compared to 3 or 4 years ago, 4 years ago when he was hired by this team. This is going to be a problem if this keeps up. I mean, I don't want to jump off the wagon too hard, because we had Bahrain 3 weeks ago and he was fine. You know, third is probably about the it's probably the bare minimum. You know, there was a mitigating factor. The team botched his pit stop towards the end of the race as well. I didn't have a problem with Bottas in that race. This one, it was like the same old Bottas problems came up about not being able to clear traffic, and then he almost gets passed by a Williams?
Yeah. And more than that. Bottas knew it when he got out of the car. We got the almost cliche shot of Bottas crouched by the perimeter fence, and we're seeing it via an aerial camera, almost like you see it with every driver who's seemingly on the verge of losing his seat, and they just had a retirement.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he
was about to be lapped by Lewis before halfway.
That's not good.
And we talked about it a little bit in the discussion before we started recording. Last year, Mercedes had an average qualifying advantage over the field of 0.7 seconds. That means that you can put in a pretty bad qualifying lap and still be on the front row.
Not here.
If there's anything Valtteri Bottas can do well, he is very good over one lap.
Right.
He has been able to, by and large, match Hamilton on and off in their time together at Mercedes.
Yeah.
In the past, a near is enough half a second gap in qualifying would still mean he's on the front row by quarter of a second over the Red Bulls.
But not here.
Probably.
This time, he qualified 8th.
Field's closer.
Field isn't just closer. It's close enough on pace to Valtteri that he just couldn't pass anyone even on pace.
No.
He was kind of in a no man's land, and was in position to be passed by a Williams, which, until this year, by sheer virtue of the Haas being a sled, was the worst car on the grid.
Yeah, they're still probably ninth on the car power rankings list. Like,
yeah.
They had a very good weekend on pace. I mean, both Williams made Q2, I think, for the first time since Latifi joined the team.
Yes.
You know,
it was a good weekend
for Williams. They were much better this weekend. We've got to give them some credit where it was due. God damn it, Latifi. Why'd you have to go hit Mazepin on the opening lap?
Rough from Latifi. Opening lap, off, then crash. But back to Bottas, I mean, if you're there to be a rear gunner, and you can't be an effective rear gunner while the Red Bulls are suddenly swarming Lewis up at the front, that's not good enough.
No, not now. Not when Red Bull Honda are finally looking like legitimate championship contenders for the first time in what feels like years. Not when Ferrari and McLaren are making genuine forward progress. Yeah, I know, it's our MO to
they're
be
a ways
wrong, but they're ways away, but they're getting closer than what they were this time last.
They're ways away, and they out-qualified Valtteri on sheer pace.
Both of them.
Yeah. Lando
was looking good
balls.
For third.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, Lando would have split the balls if he wasn't 2 inches off track. Like,
Max Verstappen blew his lap and qualified third.
And let's not. And you know what the crazy thing about all this is? He wasn't even the worst performing number two on track this weekend. He got away with one because Sergio Perez drove like a donkey this weekend.
Yeah, Perez had good pace, and that's about all that was good because he got dropped in the first stint and then
made it all the way back up just to throw it away at Tamburello chicane.
No, he got a penalty, I believe, for passing cars after going off under
under
safety car for Latifi.
Yeah, he had to take a 10-second stop go, and then he claws all the way back into the top five, only to spin it.
Yeah. But even then with Perez, he's in a new car.
Yeah.
Which he himself has said he's not acclimatized to yet.
Mm.
And you can say Red Bull very easily left a 1-2 on the table. Mercedes hasn't looked like scoring a 1-2 this year, even remotely like it.
Nope.
And that's not on Lewis.
Nope. He's held up his end of the deal.
Yeah.
That's not the issue. The issue is Val in the second car. I was telling my brother this after the race on Sunday. We are much more likely on paper right now to see a Red Bull 1-2 than a Mercedes 1-2. Because it's
inconceivable before the season started.
Right. Which is where you'd have gunned me down in Abril Akbar memes in the season preview if I said that on the show. I would like, what? Yeah, Red Bull's going to have 1-2 finishes. Like, what? Like, no. But
or at least
Perez
be on
is,
course for them.
Yeah. Yeah, like, Perez looks decent in that car. You know, he's still getting used to it, but the early signs are promising. This was not a good weekend for Sergio, but you can see the potential is there.
He
most
almost
certainly.
Grabbed pole. He almost stole pole from Hamilton.
Yeah, and that would have been invaluable for Red Bull on the weekend. This was still another open goal by Red Bull. They were not able to land a clean uppercut when Merckx had their guard down like that. This could have been a lot worse for the Constructors' Championship.
Right now, it almost looks more likely for a Red Bull Constructors than a Red Bull World Drivers' Championship. Which, again, is almost incomprehensible given the trend of the last 7 years.
Which makes Bottas's role even more important. I said it on my personal Substack that Valtteri might be the most important part of this Merckx team now. We know what Lewis Hamilton is. We know what he's capable of. He will put up at least 350 points, probably more than that, because now we're running at least 22 rounds this year, maybe 23. More on that in the new section in a bit. It's going to be at least 350, probably more than that. It's going to be nearer the 400 mark. And he's been doing this consistently for half a decade now. You know he's good for about 10 wins a year. It's the biggest nailed-on case in a sport that's normally harder to predict than this. Hamilton's good for 10 wins a year. Verstappen is getting better year on year. You know, this year
is going to be a better barometer. Is Verstappen a real title threat?
Right. So what's the elephant in the room here? It's Valtteri. He needs to be 2017 Valtteri, where he scored 300 points comfortably. That's where he needs to be at. Because I think he had 312 that year. That's roughly the ballpark he's going to need to be at to back up Hamilton if Merckx want to make absolutely sure they're going to win the Constructors' title. Because right now, he's not looking like that guy. Again, this may have just been a bad weekend. I don't want to read too much into this because Bahrain was fine. But that was an alarming sign from Valtteri, and that was the same old Valtteri problems we've had before.
Mm. Even in Bahrain, Perez was taken out of that equation from something that was not his fault. So was Bottas with his pit stop, and Perez recovered to fifth.
Yeah.
Bottas qualified down there this most recent weekend on pace, never made it through the field, and got taken out by someone in a vastly inferior car who's gunning for his job next year. Yeah. And it looks worse when you look at Hamilton, who had the benefit of a dry track, as a disclaimer, tore through the field from 9th to 2nd.
On a track where it's supposed to be, like, we were going into this weekend expecting a 4 out of 10 race because this place is not conducive to overtaking a bit.
They made DRS so powerful here by lengthening the zone out, basically, from before the pit lane, that Hamilton could follow, something Bottas could not do, come out of the final corner, open DRS, and drag race anything with four wheels.
Yeah. Like, he still was able to get past the Ferraris like they weren't even there after the restart.
Yeah, the only car he had issues with was Norris.
And Norris had to fight like hell to last as long as he did. It was a phenomenal drive from Lando. We'll get to that very shortly. But yeah, like, Valtteri might be the most important part of that Merckx team, and he needs a big season.
I think he's the weakest link now.
Yeah.
He could very well
because, be. Because, you know, it's the Mercedes isn't what it once was. It is no longer this invincible Uber car that does everything better than everything else, bomb-proof reliable, and is going to win the championship by an ever-increasing record every year.
Mm.
At worst, it's just behind the Red Bull. At best, it's about equal to the Red Bull.
Yeah.
And in equal cars, Hamilton is proving everything we thought about him right.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Valtteri Bottas is doing the same thing.
Very much so. One that we'll absolutely be keeping an eye on over the course of this season. But it was almost a poetic irony about him being taken out by the man gunning for his job at Imola in a round where he was underperforming so badly. And like I said, if you're Bottas, you're kind of lucky that you weren't the worst number two on the day. It was kind of a bad day for second cars in general. We saw Perez having off. The hilarious scene of, like, Fernando Alonso spinning under yellow as that accident happened.
Leaving the scene of the crime.
Leaving the scene, which I thought was hilarious. Like, whichever camera person or director had that shot, give them a raise. That was hilarious to watch in real time. Sebastian Vettel had a rough day with a brake-by-wire and then a gearbox failure. Also, just a quick tangent. Did anybody see the fact that Aston Martin now said today that everything is fine regarding their setup of their cars after
talking? Yeah, the only thing remarkable about Aston Martin's weekend is that Otmar is big mad, and he is not going to take it anymore.
Otmar, as a quick run through of the rest of the teams we didn't mention. Well, Alpine scored points.
Yeah!
That's about the thing we can say about them.
Yes, the 9 and 10, it's an absolute fraud.
And only because Raikkonen got penalized post-race.
Yeah, unfortunately, it isn't very fast in a straight line, it doesn't make very much downforce, and it has piss-poor mechanical traction. Other than that, it's great. Excellent.
It's great. It's blue. I love it. It scored a 9 to 10.
It's blue. I love it.
I mean, we watched Vettel pass one of them at the start of the main straight. Ocon, and was like a second down the road by the end of the straight. It was gross.
Brutal. That was rough. Haas had a rough day.
Mick Schumacher wrecked and still outperformed the other guy by about 2 seconds a lap.
Ugh. Nikita Mazepin was off of Mick Schumacher's pace, on average, 2.166 seconds a lap.
There's damage involved in that, but that's bad. That is bad.
Both cars were damaged. Mazepin, obviously, he got hit by Latifi. It was not Mazepin's fault. Latifi Probably internet. Looking at his mirrors. No, internet. For once, we can't dunk on him, but we can dunk on him for other things. Mick had quite a silly crash going down the main straight, warming up his tires, weaved a little too hard, and snapped his front wing off into the wall.
Mick, if it makes you feel better, Max spun on the safety car too. It's fine. It happens.
About the only blunder Max had all race.
Pretty much.
And, yeah, Mick annihilated Mazepin in the race.
Yeah. Rough, rough day. But hey, we're not burning the Aston Martin merch yet. I might just give it to King instead.
No, no. What you can do for the Aston Martin merch is throw it on the cake tins on the hubs of the back of the car and it'll catch on fire all by itself. Lance Stroll's car burst into flames on the way to the grid, and they had to replace mechanical components on the rear of the car. They had to repair the same components on Vettel's car, which netted him a penalty for not having his tires on at the 5-minute warning, which they gave right after his first pit stop.
Ugh.
It was just awed by the FIA.
I was like, first on the crossover, good early pace, let's get some point. Oh!
Vettel was out there setting fastest laps in the changeable conditions. He actually looked a little bit like the Sebastian Vettel we know.
It's like, and he looked on Twitter. I was on Twitter, I was like, fastest laps are good, right? And then one, like 2 minutes later, the penalty, I was like, my first tweet was, well timed, Dre! so I was like, you fucking... so that wasn't fun. And we have to give a mention as well to Lando Norris on the podium for McLaren in third. This kid's taken the step up again, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean,
this man just up and destroyed Daniel Ricciardo to the point where they had to use team orders to get Ricciardo out of the way, and Lando disappeared up the road.
Yeah, just the phrasing they use. Hey, could you let Lando in front of you? We want to see what his pace is like in clean air.
It you ain't going one fast lap enough, son.
It took him one lap to clear theoretical DRS zone.
Wow.
Lando was on fire this weekend.
Yeah. Let's just say Daniel Ricciardo has earned enough loyalty points with F1 Twitter for him not to be dunked on as the second driver in a new team. Join the club, Daniel. Point is that Lando looks damn good out there right now.
You can't get a bigger seal of approval than giving Daniel Ricciardo a bloody nose in your first two races together as teammates.
Oh, yeah. Not just that,
and that's,
but how...
Ricciardo is a climate... he is learning the car, but that's impressive.
Very. Even more impressive was how well he was able to hold off Lewis Hamilton. I know Hamilton got past him in the end, but he was putting up a much more admirable fight than anybody else Hamilton had to go through.
Well, that Mercedes-powered McLaren, let me tell you, they made the right choice. Because the Renault engine is horrible. And the Mercedes engine is as good as it ever is. And poor Charles Leclerc was on pace for a clean podium, got mugged at the red flag, got drag raced by Lewis, and I don't think he got all that he had earned in that race because Leclerc drove brilliantly.
Yeah, an excellent drive from Charles once again. It says a lot when fourth was an under-deserved result for Charles, given how well he drove, and fourth would still be a superb result for Ferrari on paper. And you look at it and you go...
4-5 on pace.
Yeah, 4-5 on pace alone. They're like, Ferrari has definitely made improvements in this 2021 car. Like,
they only could after last year's car. Holy fuck.
Don't remind me. But Sainz drove like a donkey and still finished in fifth. That says a lot about how far Ferrari's come.
Yeah, he had the first stint from hell in the rain. Ferrari went with an all-wet setup and the car still didn't look altogether comfortable in the rain.
No, but still, good stuff from them. Kind of refreshing to see McLaren and Ferrari fighting out on track again like it's 08 again, only this time it's for fourth and fifth rather than for wins.
It's 1996 again.
Yay! Yeah. Only one's orange this time, and it's kind of
weird. They both
weird.
Reek.
Relatively speaking. Right, quick look at the championship before we get into a little bit of a news story before we get out of here. As mentioned, the fastest lap was important in that race. It did go to Lewis Hamilton, and that breaks the tie with Verstappen on countback.
You thought I was kidding.
Yeah, Hamilton on 44 points, Verstappen on 43
Hashtag
points.
Hashtag blessed.
And yeah, yeah, those two are probably going to be quite closely matched for most of the year. Lando Norris now third on 27 points, Charles Leclerc on 20, and then Valtteri Bottas with 16. He's already 28 points behind his teammate after two rounds. Brutal. He's in fifth. And yeah, the constructors real quick, not that it really matters all that much at the moment outside of the top two. Merckx on 60, Red Bull 53, McLaren on 41, Ferrari on 34. And just to give you an idea of how disjointed the points are at the moment, AlphaTauri are fifth in the Constructors' Championship with 8 points.
We didn't even talk about them. AlphaTauri looked on fire here and then just threw all those points right in the river.
Kept Gasly out extreme wet too long.
Oh my god.
Pierre Gasly started out wet, dropped like a rock once the track started drying off. And still
it was never wet enough.
Seventh.
It was never wet enough to run the extreme wets. He even said that the team wanted to change, but they would have incurred, I think, the same penalty that Vettel got for switching tires.
So you mean to tell me that Pierre Gasly was put on the full wet tires in the wrong conditions again?
Yes.
Again,
it was one of those moves where they were going to look like heroes for doing it and getting it right, or, well, they ended up being zeros.
The extreme
Gasly
wet is
drove
useless.
A good race after that.
I said before, the extreme wet is useless. Don't bother running it, because if it's too wet for intermediates, they'll put them under a safety car these days anyway. There is no point in the extreme wet tire anymore. Honestly, stop running it, F1 teams. Employ me on strategy. I will not steer you wrong on this one. Like, make me your wet weather specialist.
We have to talk about Yuki Tsunoda, because for all of the excellence he displayed in Bahrain, this was a rude awakening.
Binned it.
Crashed the car in qualifying, started last, made good progress in the race, and then binned it right in front of Hamilton when the race restarted.
Still gave us the radio quote of the weekend. Traffic paradise.
Traffic paradise.
Is that the opposite of Weird Al's Amish paradise?
I guess you could say. We're spending all our lives living in a traffic paradise. Before we get out of town, we got a bit of news as well regarding the calendar as well. And, King, we're not going to Canada.
Yes, because according to the CBC... the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, last Thursday, they reported that the Canadian Grand Prix is cancelled. Formula One claimed that they're still in negotiations, but obviously Canada's state broadcaster knows a lot about the situation, and they say the race is cancelled. Formula One, if the race were to be held, Formula One would have run it behind closed doors. They would have wanted extra compensation to have the race, including, I think, at least $2 million. Plus, they wanted to bypass Canada's quarantine laws to get the race done without F1 having to quarantine within Canada. And apparently, that was a no-go for Canada.
Canada ain't effing about with these rules, man. No, like, nope, we're not compromising on any of this. And so, yeah, no Canadian Grand Prix. So, as it stands, we're down to 22 races for the year. We don't know for sure if Canada will be replaced by anything. There's still rumors regarding that. We'll let you know.
Well, yeah, F1
happens.
Does have a number of backup venues in case a race gets cancelled.
Indeed. So we'll have to wait and see if they pick one to fill in that blank, which where Canada would normally be, which I think is normally in June, I want to say.
Yes.
We'll have to wait and see on that one. Also, they did finally announce officially, as you can tell by F1's new vaporwave colors on their Twitter avatars, we're going to Miami, baby.
For real
year.
This time! It's happening! 2022, baby! Right around Hard Rock Stadium.
King, you look
Dolphin
so happy
Stadium,
about this.
Formerly Landshark Stadium. Formerly Dolphin Stadium. Formerly Dolphin Stadium. Formerly Pro Prayer Stadium. Formerly
Someone
Joe
unplug
Stadium.
RJ.
Yeah. King, you look delighted about this news.
Yeah, it'll be a fine race. The track looks good. Venue's fine. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing really to complain about. Like, I think my only complaint's, like, there are already so many races on the calendar.
We're set for 24 next year.
Doing it for Jeff Gordon.
If COTA holds up, we're going to have two races in the United States. It's doing its
best.
Well, so Domenicali
become a year-round sport.
Well, Stefano Domenicali's implied that it will be a 23-race schedule next year, and people have come to the conclusion that the Spanish Grand Prix is probably going to get dropped for this race.
Wow. They're dropping Catalunya. I did not think they would cut Catalunya of all places.
Really? This race has been dropped. This would be the second time this race would be dropped in the past 3 years.
Yeah.
Good, I'm not complaining or anything, but, you know, I'm like, really? Catalunya again? Oh, no. Anyway.
And nothing of value was lost.
No. Don't worry. Catalunya is going to be part of the new Super League formula. Wait, we already had that shit. It could be part of Super Formula. No, we have that, too. What about Super League Super Formula?
Hey, I've driven Super Formulas around Catalunya. They're okay.
Yeah, so we're going to have Miami on the calendar next year. We don't know yet whether it's good. Like there's rumors swirling that it could end up being the fully blown United States Grand Prix eventually, because COTA's not in a good way at all financially. And there's a lot of rumblings that Miami might end up being the one and only United States Grand Prix on the calendar in the not too distant future. But hey, who doesn't have a bit of vaporwave, right? You know, has anyone done any GTA Vice City cover arts yet? Has that been done? You know,
I think there has been one actually.
Yeah, I knew it. It's like it was too easy a social media thing to put out there, wasn't it? But yes, Miami. That'll be on the calendar next year. Hooray. So, yeah, no Canada, but we're getting Miami next year. Yay. I mean, yes, I guess it's nice. I know F1 badly wants to crack America and, you know, is really determined to take as much of NASCAR's dominant market share as possible. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe a Grand Prix at South Beach helps. We'll see. You know,
they're all taking their talents to South Beach.
All of them. Not two, not three, not... Anyway, let's get out of town here on this one. Overall, before we get out of here as well, pretty darn good Imola Grand Prix.
Yeah,
certainly
it exceeded expectations.
Watch.
Granted, our expectations were pretty low, but
yeah,
still, it exceeded them. Well, solid 7.5.
So far, we're 2 for 2 on pretty good races.
Bizarre.
Don't let us down, Portimao.
F1's had an objectively really good start to the season. I'm not sure how I feel about this. This is strange. They'll be back at Portimao in a couple of weeks' time, which we'll also be talking about in the next episode as we talk about MotoGP's race weekend there. And some guy came back. Likes ant helmets. Quite freakish on a motorcycle. Has about 1.75 good arms.
I think you're overestimating that.
Yeah, some guy called Mark. We'll talk about that next time. Basically, you can find us real quick in the meantime. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you'd like to follow our handles, they're on the screen right now. If you listen to us via audio, it's at Harrison101HD, at CBuckley917, at RJ O'Connell, and at Ryan Eric King. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 for all the audio episodes, early access, $10 for the video version. Support us, cover the Discord as well, where you can listen to them live as they're being recorded. Shout out to everyone in the YouTube chat on Unlisted watching along. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Stick around, there'll be another one coming very, very shortly. Of course, I've got you on Instagram as well, Motorsport101Pod. We'll probably stick that really funny outro from last week on there as well, because sod it, why not? King wanted to humiliate me, which is understandable. That's what he gets for wearing that silly German shirt. oh dear, but we'll be back to talk about MotoGP in Portimao. But until then, I've been Andre Harrison. They've been Cam Buckley, RJ O'Connell, and Ryan Eric King. Please don't defect to any other podcast networks in the meantime, and we'll be back next week. Sayonara.
Later, y'all!
Bye.
We have no affiliation with the European Superpod.
He says that now. We'll be back for another go next year.